Lux Radio Theater. Tonight and every Monday night at this time, Lux Radio Theater presents for your entertainment the finest in radio drama.
An Act of Mercy.
There, you see? A few taps of the mallet does it. Then all you have to do is to clamp the wheelchair onto the sledge, like this, and it works.
I can move around outside in the snow, using the crutches to push myself along. Come on, Reese. You and Flora get me out on the snow, and I'll give you a demonstration.
You mean it actually works?
Yes, of course it does. We were out in the snow yesterday. It was a stroke of genius, David, you're thinking of putting runners on the wheelchair. I wasn't able to push the chair through the snow.
All right, let's give it a try.
It works best through these French windows. There's a slight incline to give the chair a start.
Yeah, let me do it, Flora. You close the windows. I don't want you catching a cold. I wouldn't like you as a patient.
All right, I'll stay here.
Just see how it works, Reese, and you better get in. You're not muffled up like I am.
Oh, David, if you're going to sit near the brink of the hill, do be careful, won't you?
Don't worry, Flora, I'll be fine. I just watch the sun go down, and I'll be right back.
Yes, but not too close to the edge, David. If the sledge went over, you'd coast right into the pond. And don't stay too long, it's cold.
Oh, how cold this house has become. How cold and empty when he leaves. He's coming back now. Oh, Reese. Reese, my darling.
Oh, it's freezing. But David's enjoying himself outside.
Come over to the fire and warm yourself. Let me warm your hands, they're icy.
Oh, Flora. Flora.
Oh, my darling. Hold me tightly. Oh, Reese. No, it's wrong. Let me go. I mustn't. I shouldn't. But I can't help myself. Reese, hold me and don't ever let me go.
Oh, it's wrong, I know. But I can't stop loving you because you happen to be married to David.
Darling, don't think about it. We mustn't stop to think. Just look upon me as a woman who's so terribly, so dreadfully in love with you.
I do. I know. That's why we can't go on like this.
But what are we going to do?
You must tell David and ask for a divorce.
But on what grounds, Reese? No court would grant a divorce because David is so helpless. How would they look on me? What sympathy can I expect? A wife who wants to leave an invalid husband.
You still care for him?
Yes, but not in the way you mean. It's just pity that I feel. The same pity I would have for anyone who was helpless. You do believe me. You do understand. Don't you? Don't you?
I don't know.
Oh, don't you see? It'd be so easy to tell him if he were well and strong, but not the way he is.
Flora, this is not a new situation. Two people marry. After a few years, one of them becomes a helpless invalid. The other faces it bravely at first. At first. For didn't they swear they'd love each other always?
Don't, Reese.
But what happens? The weeks, the months, the years go by. And looking ahead to the future, one can see it in the present and the past. Love changes to pity. Pity to self-pity. Self-pity to hate.
No, I don't hate.
You don't hate David. I know that, Flora. But you hate the situation. Your first thought was of how unfair it was. You still think so.
I hate it. I loathe it. I can't stand it any longer.
Hating the situation is driving you to hate the man who makes it as it is.
Oh, it's so hopeless, Reese. Can't you see I'm trapped eternally?
No, I won't let you say that. It's the same as saying that life is over for you. It isn't, Flora. It's unfair that anyone so full of life, so capable of loving, should be tied to a man already half dead and with no hope of getting better. He must be told. Good grief, if he loves you, he'll release you, Flora.
But he's not to blame for what happened to him.
No one's to blame. It just happened. Just as our love for each other couldn't be helped. But we can blame ourselves if we don't do something about it.
But to tell him now, when getting about in the snow gives him so much pleasure, it would be so cruel, Reese. Can't we wait until
what? Haven't you considered that David might live on like this for years, until you're a bitter old woman?
That thought is with me every hour, day and night. The other night, I dreamed that David had died.
Had you dreamed it before?
Yes, many times.
What was your first thought? You know, the one that comes with the dream itself, before you wake up.
No, I can't tell you.
You must tell me.
You don't know what you're asking me.
Please, Flora, are you ashamed to tell me?
Ashamed? No, I'm glad.
I'm utterly without shame. My first thought was, now I'm free to love Rhys, to marry Rhys and bear his children. My body became alive from my dream and woke me up.
Oh, darling.
It's David. He wants to come in. Do you suppose he saw us?
I hope so. Even so, we must tell him everything.
Just loosen the clamps, Rhys. I'll leave the sled here. Yeah, that's right. Come on up, Laura. You pull on the crutch and Rhys will push the chair. That's it.
Come over to the fire, David.
Yeah, that's better. Help me off with my overcoat, will you? Thank you, my dear. Flora, will you pour us all some sherry?
Yes, of course. You must be chilled. You shouldn't have stayed out so long.
Or should I have stayed out a little longer, perhaps?
David, there's something I want to tell you.
First, a toast, Reese.
A toast?
Yes, that's right, Flora. Take a glass, both of you. That's it. Now, let's drink to a successful solution.
Solution to what, David?
To our problem, of course. Yours and mine and Reese's.
Oh, David, you saw us.
I saw you in Reese's arms. It always creates a problem, knowing one's wife is in love with another man. So, let's drink up to a successful solution.
I agree, to a successful solution.
And now, hold your glasses into the fireplace. Now. You won't? Oh, well. The wine's a little dry. Or am I imagining things? Well?
David, I don't know how to begin. I always meant...
I know. You meant to tell me, but you never got around to it.
Just before you came in, we'd agreed that we must tell you at once.
We didn't want to hurt you, David.
Of course you didn't, Flora. You probably agreed between the two of you that what happened can't be helped. Love is just as much a disease as the kind that wrecked my body. I've sort of known for some time, so it isn't a great surprise, you know.
Then you can understand.
Yes, yes, I can understand everything. It was bound to happen. I saw that. I even tried to solve the problem my own, but I found I didn't have the courage.
Oh, David.
Yes, Flora, I am helpless, a burden to you. But I'm still capable of being in love. And it's love that turns me into a coward when I try to take the one step that would give you complete freedom.
Oh, David, what have we done to you?
Believe me, David, I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry, Rhys. Rather be glad for your love. My love is my weakness. Your love will be your strength. Now, with your help, I think the whole thing can be worked out successfully.
Help? From Rhys?
Yes.
How? What do you mean, David? Don't ask Rhys to go away. I couldn't stand it.
That wouldn't solve anything. A few weeks ago, I wrote a note to you, Flora, telling you of my love for you and saying goodbye. That night, I took an overdose of sleeping pills. Not quite enough, it seems. And since then, I haven't had the courage to try again. Flora, that note is still in my desk. But next time, I'll need a doctor's help.
A doctor's help?
We'll let Rhys perform what is known as an act of mercy. Some night soon. Let him give me something that will put me to sleep forever.
That's murder.
It's unthinkable. How can you ask Rhys to do something?
I give my consent. I want it. I get him to do this for me. For you. For all of us.
The law still calls it murder.
I thought you loved her, Doctor.
I love her. Flora knows that. I don't have to commit a murder to prove my love.
Then, my dear Doctor, you know what's ahead for the three of us. You and I will watch the woman we love die inwardly. And we'll remember that neither of us had the courage to save her. It's a slow, frustrating decay for all of us. Unless you, Rhys, or I, can find the courage to end things soon. I've tried, but I've failed. An act of mercy, Doctor. That's what it'll be.
Oh, Oh, please stop pacing, Reese. Go home and get some sleep.
David's right. It's his body to do with as he wishes. If he doesn't want to drag through life like a wounded animal, why shouldn't he have the right to end his misery?
But not by your hand, Reese. If he did it himself, I suppose I'd be able to forget in time. But if you did it, I don't know how I'd feel. I don't know. I don't know. I would be so afraid.
But can't you see he won't or can't do it himself?
It's his helplessness that makes him afraid, not his love for me.
I wonder what I'd do in his place. Oh, it's ironic. Your husband loves you enough to die for you. All he asks is a little help from me. And I, who love you so much, refuse to give that help.
Oh, don't, Reese. You're tired, upset. Please go home and rest.
No. No, it has to be settled now. Where's my bag? Yes, I have it here.
Reese! Reese, what are you going to do?
He's fast asleep from pills now. When he wakes up in the morning and takes his medicine, it'll be this. He'll never know. For you, it is a chance to start life again from when it ended so soon after our wedding day. It's not dated. I'm going to change the medicine now.
Change the medicine.
Yes. Empty this and wash the glass thoroughly. And then go to bed. He'll take the medicine when he wakes up and prop this note on the table beside his bed. At the time that you would normally awaken, phone me at once and tell me you found your husband dead. Then phone the police. I'll get here first and check everything. Good night, dear. I must go now. You realize that. It seems we've lived a lifetime since sundown.
No. 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 Oh, no.
Hello, Dr. Irwin speaking.
Hello, Dr. Irwin. This is Sergeant Jackson. I'm over at the Hudson House. I'd like you to come over right away. David Hudson has just been drowned in the pond.
What? Drowned?
Yes. Hurry, Doctor. We're working on him.
I'll be right over.
Is there any hope?
I'm afraid he's gone, Mrs. Hudson. Oh, good. Here's Dr. Irwin.
Let me take over. No, stay where you are, Jackson.
Shall I keep on trying, Doctor? I've been working on him for half an hour.
No. It's no use. He's gone.
Where's your telephone, Mrs. Hudson? I must phone the coroner.
It's in the hall. Through that door.
In heaven's name, what happened?
I couldn't. After you left, I put the glass back with this regular medicine. I destroyed the other.
But why? Why? After we decided...
I saw how troubled you were, how worn and tired. You didn't know what you were doing. I couldn't let you go through with it. There's your profession to think of. There'd be all those questions. I was frightened.
The coroner will be out in about half an hour or so. Now, sit down, Mrs. Hudson. You feel you can tell us what happened?
Yes. Yes, I think I can, Sergeant Jackson.
Are you all right to question her, Doctor?
Yes. I think Mrs. Hudson can answer your questions, but please make it as brief as possible.
Tell us what happened, Mrs. Hudson.
Yes. David got up as usual this morning and
had his breakfast. He likes to sit on the brink of the slope there. So after breakfast, I put the wheelchair on the sledge and pushed him to that spot where he loves to be.
You leave him there alone?
Yes. He can push himself along with his crutches. When he wants to come back in, he taps on the window. Well, I came in to clear the breakfast dishes. Of course, I'd looked out now and then to see if he was all right or wanted anything.
How long was he out there?
How long? Well, I was in the kitchen for about 20 minutes, I should say. Then I looked out of the window, and David was gone. I ran out and saw that he'd coasted down the slope, was face down in the pond below. I started to run down the hill, but realized I'd need help to get him out. So I ran back and telephoned you to Jackson, and then I ran back to the pond and tried to get him out.
She was up to her waist in water when I arrived, and that water was freezing cold, Doctor.
I felt nothing. I was blaming myself. Only yesterday I'd warned David about getting too close to the brink of the hill. I was so afraid the sledge might accidentally get too far over.
Mrs. Hudson, that slide was not accidental.
What do you mean, Sergeant Jackson?
What else could it be?
Dear Mrs. Hudson, your husband must have pushed himself deliberately onto the slope.
What makes you say that?
This note addressed to you, Mrs. Hudson. One of his crutches was sticking up in the snow, and this was wedged in near the bottom. See?
May I look at it, Flora?
Yes. Yes, of course.
I see.
Now, I'll take it. It will be needed at the inquest. No doubt they'll return a verdict of suicide. I'm sorry, Mrs. Hudson.
I know. Thank you.
Well, I'll get down to the pond and see if I can get the wheelchair in.
So David did find the courage after all.
Yes.
Oh, Flora, Flora, I can never repay you for changing that medicine. It would have been murder, legally and morally. I would have regretted it all my life.
I know. I wanted to save you from that.
It would have stood between us, ruined our chance of happiness. Now David has made it possible for us to start our new life without a murder on our conscience.
Yes.
Poor David. He's freed us, Flora. He meant us to be happy together. We must always be grateful to him.
Yes,
he had the courage to die. We must have the courage to accept his great gift and live.
Yes, yes, Reese, only stop talking about it. Take me away from here as soon as you can. I can't live in this house any longer. Oh, take me away.
Of course. Of course.
Dreadful day of judgment when the secrets of all hearts shall be disclosed, that if either of you know any impediment why you may not be lawfully joined in matrimony, you now confess. Repeat after me. I, Flora, take thee, Rhys, to be my wedded husband.
I, Flora, take thee, Rhys, to be my wedded husband.
To have and to hold from this day forward.
To have and to hold from this day forward.
For better, for worse.
For better, for worse.
For richer, for poorer.
For richer, for poorer.
In sickness and in health.
In sickness and in health.
To love and cherish until death do us part.
To love and then cherish until...
Till death do us part.
Till death do us part.
I now pronounce you man and wife. You may kiss the bride. Well, I hear you'll be leaving us soon, Dr. Irwin.
Yes, we're off to South America next month.
South America? Well, well. Whereabouts?
Rio. I've been appointed assistant director of a research project for the Radio Foundation.
Well, congratulations to you both. May the blessing of God be with you always.
music for her.
Oh, it's wonderful. So alive. I see it even to my toes.
Happy, darling?
Dreadfully happy, Reese.
Sounds contradictory. Oh,
I'm so happy, I'm frightened. Afraid it can't be mine unless it's all paid for someday. If that ever happens, the price for what I feel now would be more than I could bear.
No, darling. Rather say that you've earned this happiness. It's your reward for...
For those years I spent with David.
Yes. But let's not talk of that again. David wanted this for you. That's why he released you. Let's accept it as a generous act and not question it for ourselves. I love you, darling.
I'm so glad. So glad that you do, Reese.
Well, shall we call it a day?
I think so, yes.
You look tired. We want to be up early to see the ship come into the harbor. They say it's the most beautiful harbor in the world.
Sister, how's Mrs. Irwin?
Morning, Dr. Patterson. Oh, she's very upset, Doctor, and worried sick.
What about?
She's afraid her baby will be born blind or crippled or dead or anything else she can think of.
They all go through that with their first child.
I know, but she's worse than any of the others. Her fears and anxiety are almost abnormal, I'd say.
Hmm. I didn't expect this kind of behavior from her, you know, doctor's wife. They're so happy together. I was so happy when she found out she was going to have a child.
She's ecstatic one moment and then down in the dumps the next.
I don't know what gets into women. She's been in Rio for over a year. Seems to like the place. She has a brilliant husband who's making a name in medical research. He's completely devoted to
her. That's just it. She seems to have been blessed with so much happiness and everything's going so well that she can't understand what she's done to deserve it. She has an obsession that she's got to pay for it all. Some way, someday.
Oh. She's that kind. Afraid to be happy for fear it can't last.
She has the idea that God has a plan to make her supremely happy for a time and then strike at her through her child.
I ever got the impression that she was a religious woman.
I don't know that she is, but I know she's afraid, terribly afraid, and getting more so every day. And the baby's due on Sunday.
Dr. Patterson, you're wanting maternity. Dr. Patterson wants the maternity.
You can do what you can to reassure her, sister. I'll look in on her as soon as I'm through.
Congratulations, Dr. Irwin. You're a father. A girl, 6 pounds, 5 ounces. Everything's fine. A normal delivery. Mother and daughter both came through splendidly. You can see the baby as soon as she's in the crib.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, you're wonderful, sister. Yeah, have a cigar. I mean, let me kiss you. Oh, when can I see my boy?
Oh, Dr. Irwin, control yourself. It's excitable fathers who make nursing a hazardous occupation.
May I see my wife?
I'll ask Dr. Patterson about that.
She's all right, isn't she?
Of course she is. I'll be back in a minute.
No, no. Don't let my baby die. Take me. Please take me and let my baby live.
Mrs. Irwin, nobody's gonna die. Everything's fine. Couldn't be better.
My baby. Where's my baby?
Your baby's fine too, Mrs. Irwin. A girl. Perfect in every way.
Let me see her. Let me hold her.
Not now. Later. You must get some rest now.
What's wrong? Why can't I see her? What are you hiding from me? Let me get up.
Mrs. Irwin, please don't exert yourself. You can't get up now.
My baby. Why can't I see my baby? There's something wrong with her. That's why you won't let me see her.
Mrs. Irwin, your baby's perfect.
You're lying. You're afraid to tell me the truth.
Here, Sister Fergus, dear baby. She's 6 pounds, 5 ounces, and normal in every respect.
Now, if you like quietly, Mrs. Irwin, you can hold her for a while.
Oh, my baby. My beautiful baby girl. Doctor, she's not blind or crippled or anything.
A perfect baby, Mrs. Irwin.
Forgive me, Dr. Patterson, for being such a fool. I couldn't help it.
Remember me, sister? I'm the new father you left standing in the corridor. All right, if I come in for a minute, Dr. Patterson.
Sure, come in. Come on.
Oh, Flora. Oh, Flora.
Look, darling. A little girl, and she's perfect. Oh, Reese, I'm so happy.
Mommy's fighting with Daddy. Daddy?
Yes, Billy, I think so.
Why do they fight, Ellen?
They fight about us most of the time.
Yeah, but they're fighting about now and there.
Yes. Daddy wants Mother to let us go to the party that Mercedes is giving. But Mother doesn't want us to go.
I hope Daddy wins.
He won't. He never does.
No, he never does. But I would like to go to Mercedes' party.
Can't you see, Flora, that it isn't right to keep the children tied to you? They should get out and play with other kids.
Please, please, reach my nerve. Don't start another scene. We've been through all this before and it's settled. I will not...
No, it's not settled. The only time you regard things as settled is when you have your own way.
That's not true, Miss.
Billy and Ellen have never been allowed to lead a normal life. You shelter them. You do everything for them and hardly let them out of your sight.
Is it so wrong for a mother to want to help her children, to protect them?
No, it isn't, but you overdo it. There's absolutely no reason at all why they shouldn't go to the birthday party of the little Fernandez girl.
There is. I told you why. There's sickness about. They might catch it. And the other children are rough and wild. Supposing Billy got into a fight with one of them, or Ellen.
Suppose he did get into a fight. What if he got a black eye or handed one out? No, I don't think that's likely after the way you babied him. Billy's six, he's not two. Oh, good grief. Kids are bound to get roughed up a little when they play.
But he's so delicate and the other boys are so big and rough.
If Billy's delicate, and I don't agree that he is, it's because you've kept him indoors and supervised every move he's ever made. Well, it has to stop. Can't you see that? I want you to call Billy and Ellen and tell them they can go to the party. Now, call them in.
No, no, Reese. Please, you don't understand.
I agree, I don't understand. I don't understand what's come over you since you first knew that you were having Ellen. You drove them crazy at the hospital. From the way you carried on, it's a mystery to me why we ever had another child after Ellen. At first, I thought it was just an overdose of fear that most women experience with a new baby. But it stuck with you, and it gets worse all the time. It's right for a woman to love her children and look after them, but by heavens, you carry it to the point where it's abnormal. Flora, I'm going to insist for once. Call the children.
You want them to get hurt. You've never loved them. Oh, yes. You think because you're a famous doctor, you can make them well again, no matter how sick they may get or how broken their bones. You have no feeling for them, no feeling for your own children. You don't care if they get hurt. You wouldn't care if they were dead. Then you'd be very happy.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop hysterics.
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry I had to slap you, Flora.
Oh, Mommy, don't cry. Daddy, what's the matter with Mother? Why is she crying?
Oh, my darling, you come to me. You love me. I know, and I love you so much. You don't want to go to the party and leave your mother, do you?
Well, we want to be with you, Mommy.
We don't want to go if it makes you cry.
And Mother wants her two darling children to be with her. We'll have a party right here, and there'll be ice cream and cake. More of everything than at the Mercedes party.
Can I wear my party dress?
Of course, darling. Come along, we'll get ready.
Flora, please stay a moment.
But, oh, all right, dear. Now, Ellen, you and Billy go to your rooms, and I'll be along soon and help you dress up for your party.
I'm going to wear my new shoes, too. They've got bows on them, and they're shiny.
I'm going to ask Mummy to buy me shiny shoes, too.
Now, sit down, Flora.
Reese, dear, you're not going to scold me, are you?
No, but I'm worried about you. Flora, what is it that's troubling you?
Oh, I don't know, Reese. Just nerves, I think.
But just nerves develop from some cause, from worry or fear or anxiety. There are times when you seem terribly frightened of something. You jump at sudden noises. I've watched you.
I don't know what you're talking about. What noises?
Well, the doorbell or the telephone ringing. Your whole body is tense until you know just what it is.
I hadn't realized I behaved like that.
You do, Flora. Whenever the children are out of the house, you're restless and nervy. When they come in, you fly to them and hug them as though they'd been missing for days. As though you'd never expected to see them again.
Why do you say that?
Because it's true. Flora, it's been like that for a long time now, ever since the children were born.
I'm a little anxious about them at times, that's all.
That's not all. Flora, can't you help me to understand what's troubling you, so that I can help you?
I'd like to tell you, Reese, but how can I when I don't understand myself? You interpret my love for the children as some sort of abnormal anxiety, or give some other medical term for a mother's normal reaction.
But it isn't normal. I mean... But, Flora, don't get angry with me. But I suggest I make an appointment for you to consult Dr. Alvarado.
He's a psychiatrist, isn't he?
That's right.
You think I'm going mad, don't you?
Oh, Flora, you know better than that. You yourself have just said that you don't understand what's troubling you. But something obviously is. There's something hidden in the back of your mind that's causing this undue anxiety. And Dr. Alvarado might help to bring it to light. Oh, that's all, dear. You need help. Won't you let me get it for you?
No. I disagree with you. I don't think I need psychiatric help or any other kind of help. I don't think I've reached a stage where I need a psychiatrist.
Flora, long ago we agreed never to mention David. But I want to ask you a question. Has his death anything to do with this fear? Well?
No, of course not. How could there be any connection?
Do you ever think about him?
Well, naturally, I think of David now and then. I can't control my thoughts, can I?
I don't mean that. Perhaps I'm not explaining myself clearly. What I mean is this. Do you feel responsible in any way for what David did?
Do you, Reese?
No. My conscience is clear. I almost made a terrible mistake that night. I don't know what state of mind I'd be in now if you hadn't changed the glasses. But I'm sure I'd have been plagued through the years by my thoughts. I would have lost confidence and respect for myself. It would have interfered with my work, with my relationship with other doctors. I would certainly not be where I am today, holding down the job I'm doing. These so-called acts of mercy lost their scientific aspect when I realized how easy it is to die. How terribly hard to keep a heart beating. Any man can take a life. None can restore it.
You've changed a great deal since that night.
Yes. Haven't you?
Yes. Yes. I've changed a great deal.
Oh, Flora. I didn't mean to hurt you. I want to help.
I know. And you can by taking me away from here. I want to get away from Rio. I want to get back home. We must go for the sake of the children. The climate's not good for them. And there's so much disease about with mosquitoes and other carriers.
Flora, that's not true, and you know it.
Isn't that what you're here for? All this research foundation?
Of course, but you're safe here in Rio.
I don't feel safe. I want to go home, I tell you.
But Flora, I'm in the middle of a tremendous project. Urgently needed experiments.
Exactly. You're in contact with tropical diseases every day. You could be a carrier of the germs. Think how you'd feel if you were the cause of infecting the children.
Is this what's troubling
you? Yes. Almost from the beginning. At first, when we arrived here, I was afraid it might be you. Then I was afraid for the children. I tried to live with my fear, to come to terms with it. But I failed. I can't cope anymore. I've hated this place from the start. For almost 10 years, I've lived in fear.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because I knew how important your work was to you. But this fear has poisoned me because I tried to bottle it up inside me. I didn't want to worry you. Yes, yes, that's what's caused all the nervousness and anxiety you've noticed.
Darling, you should have told me. I wish you'd told me. How was I to know?
Then you'll consider going. You will, won't you?
We've been here for close on 10 years. My contract will be up for renewal in 3 months' time. Work on the project nearly finished. Yes, perhaps you're right. Perhaps we've both missed a great deal by coming out here in the first place. The children, too. It's time we thought of their schooling, I suppose.
And it'll do us good, too, Reese. Everything will be different, you'll see. I'll get over my nerves. I'll be a different person once we get back home. Oh, just think, Reese. The children have never seen snow or ice on the rivers.
We'll do it. You're right, Flora. It's time we went home. I'll make arrangements to wind up my work here, and we'll leave as soon as possible. There'll be no trouble about a job. I've been turning down offers all these years. But of course, we'll have to buy a house. We could get an agent onto it right away and just clinch things when we arrive. Yes, that's what we'll do.
But, darling, we've got a house. I told you I want to go home.
To your old house?
Yes, of course. That's why I never agreed to sell it. I couldn't. Somehow I always had the feeling I'd be coming back to it someday.
But the associations... No, I really don't think you would.
But it's my home, darling. I was brought up there. It's where I belong. My father left it to me and David and I'm strongly attached to the old house. Fascinated. Oh, darling, don't worry. Not morbidly fascinated because of what happened. Just because it's home and I was happy there once. And the children will be too. You'll see. There are those old oak trees for them to climb and the playhouse by the pond. They'll love the playhouse. We'll paint it all up again for them. And I'll make curtains for the window. And they'll be able to have picnic luncheons there. Oh, Reese, I feel so happy, so uplifted. A wonderful feeling of exaltation and release as I visualize our arrival.
Reese, we have to go. It's the only place in the world I want to be.
Good evening, Dr. Irwin.
You must be Mrs. Gower.
That's right, ma'am. Come and shake hands with Mrs. Gower, children. She's going to help me look after you.
How do you do? I'm Billy. We came on an aeroplane.
You don't say an aeroplane. It's an aeroplane, Billy. I'm Ellen. I'm 2 years older than Billy.
I'm sure I can see that. You're nearly a head taller.
He's six. He's going to start school soon.
Are you now, Billy?
Well, darling, what do you think of your new home?
It's not as big as the one in Rio.
But it's so much cozier. You're going to love it here.
They've done a nice job on redecorating it, darling.
It's the same firm we've always dealt with. Oh, so little has changed. I thought you might be hungry after your trip. I set the table in the dining room, and there's a hot supper all ready to take from the oven.
Ah, wonderful. This central heating's made a difference to the place. It's a brainwave of yours, Flora.
May we see the upstairs of the house? We've never lived in a house with an upstairs.
Well, yes. I'll take you up if you like, children. I'm sure you'll want to see your room.
Oh, yes, please.
I want to see the snow. Daddy told us all about the snow. I've never seen snow. They don't have snow where we live.
It's too hot, Daddy says.
So I've heard. But I'm afraid our snow is gone now.
Didn't men take it away?
Oh, no, bless you, no. The sun melted it. But there'll be more.
When?
Oh, any day now. The weatherman on the radio said maybe tonight.
Tonight?
I wouldn't be at all surprised. Now come along, Ellen. That's a lovely name for a girl.
She seems a very pleasant soul. I think the children have taken to her already.
Hmm?
Mrs. Gower, I said she seems very nice.
Yes. It's changed very little.
I told the agent not to change much inside, to use the same color paint as outside.
Oh, it's beautifully done. I like it very much. Reese, the pond. What's happened to the pond?
I had it drained and filled in. I thought it best.
Yes, that was very thoughtful of you. I'm glad.
Flora.
Yes?
Now that I'm here, I'm not at all sure we've done the wisest thing by coming back.
I had to come back. I don't know why, but I couldn't help myself. I simply had to come back, Reese. I feel that I belong here, now, and for always.
Outside, as usual.
Well, you shouldn't leave them alone so long, Reese. It's freezing cold. I don't like them to be playing in the wet snow.
Oh, they love it. It's the most fascinating thing here. Ellen thinks it should always be like this, a world with a white carpet.
Mummy, Mummy, look what we found.
Oh, I saw it first. It was hanging on the shed. There's hundreds of them. They make a fringe.
But I knocked it down with a stick.
What is it, Daddy?
It's an icicle. It's formed by dripping water that freezes.
Icicle? Ice?
Oh, it's just a piece of ice, and it's dirty, Billy. Don't lick it. Here, throw it into the pot. Oh, Billy, your gloves are soaking wet. Ellen, take yours off at once, too. Where have you two been for so long?
We were building a snowman. The boy next door showed us how.
Daddy, he says we make ice by putting pieces of coal in his head. Can I have some coal?
Certainly. And you can have my old top hat to put on his head.
The boy next door, his name's Martin. But he pushed us on his sledge, and we went coasting all the way down the hill. It was super.
Coasting? Where?
Down that hill, Mother. You can see it from the window.
That was the best fun of all.
We took turns. I put Billy on the sledge, and we gave him a push, and down he went like lightning. Martin said the kids here called it coasting. They do it all winter, whenever it snows.
I want a sledge for Christmas, Daddy. Daddy, could I have a sledge for Christmas?
Where do I want a sledge?
I think we could manage a sledge, Billy.
Mother, can I have a sledge, too, all for myself?
No, 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 never, never.
Flora.
Never, understand? Never ask me for a sledge again.
Oh, please, Flora, control yourself. They merely asked if they could have a sledge. I see no reason why they shouldn't.
They can't. I won't allow it.
Oh, but be reasonable. It's perfectly safe. The pond's filled in. It's perfectly harmless toy.
I wasn't thinking of that.
Then what? Give me a reason.
Reason, reason. Must you always have to close me for a reason? I don't want them to have it. That's all there is to it.
All right. But I'm interested in knowing why their request has upset you like this.
I don't want to stand there and watch them push each other down that hill. Can you understand that?
Sure, I'm sorry.
Oh, if you can't understand, then I must explain it to you. I don't want to see the tracks in the snow. I don't want them to have that sledge, never. Can't you see that it will cut tracks like those I watched the morning David coasted down that hill?
Good heavens, Flora, what are you saying? Here, Ellen, take Billy out into the kitchen, will you? Now, off you go, darling. There's a good girl. Go along, Billy. We'll talk about this some other time. Now, off you go, then. Mummy will get your tea presently. Flora. Flora, you must be careful what you say in front of the children.
The tracks in the snow. I can see them now. I always see them. Just two tracks in the snow. And as I fell on my knees that day, it seemed I held two long reins in my hands. Two lines that tied me at the top of the hill with David below in the pond. His chair was upside down, and the wheel was spinning and spinning and spinning.
Flora, in heaven's name, stop! Don't you know what you're saying?
Don't shout, Reese. There's nothing for you to get excited about. I was just telling you why I don't want the children to get a sledge for Christmas. Why can't you see my point of view for a change? Why don't you consider my feelings sometimes? The shops are full of all sorts of wonderful toys, so why must the children have a sledge, for goodness sake? Anything. Get them anything, but not that.
Why, Flora?
Why? Why do you have to ask me why? Because the sledge would bring back memories, that's why.
Memories you want to forget?
Yes, yes, of course. Why are you looking at me like that?
What way am I looking at you?
Accusing me.
Flora, you said you stood on the hill that morning David drowned and watched the tracks forming as he coasted down.
Of course I saw the tracks.
You said you watched the tracks as they took form. How could you do that if you were in the kitchen as you testified at the inquest? Did you lie? Were you telling the truth? Were you in the kitchen when David went down that hill?
I don't remember just how it happened. I don't remember.
I want the truth.
The truth, the truth.
Yes.
Do you, Reese? Are you sure?
I think I know it. It wasn't an accident. It was deliberate. But on your part, not David's. When you pushed him over the brink that day, you slipped. You fell on your knees, you said. And those tracks in the snow were like long ribbons that tied you to David in the pond. To David, who was drowning while the wheel from the upturned chair was spinning.
Yes.
You pushed him down the hill.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, sit down, Flora. Sit down.
I never wanted you to know. Oh, never.
And that's why you've been afraid all these years, Flora. That's why, even when you seem most happy, that look of fright would creep into your eyes.
Yes, yes. I was afraid to be happy. I was afraid it couldn't last and that I would be punished for what I'd done. But I wasn't punished, Reese. I asked myself why. I knew I would have to pay. I expected it. I expected God to strike me down. But he didn't. And with every moment that the blow was withheld, my fear increased. Then, one night, I saw the can. He wasn't going to strike me, but would punish me through my children. He was going to take them away. He was putting all the happiness in the world in my lap, so that when he did strike, my punishment would be more terrible.
And you let me go on thinking that David had done away with himself.
I had to. I couldn't tell you. You were so relieved that you hadn't done it. You told me how grateful you were that I'd saved you. That day, before we left for South America, you said that you had almost made a terrible mistake. How could I tell you after that, even if I'd wanted to?
Yet, that night, when I almost committed murder, you couldn't go through with it. Why?
It's so hard to explain it to you now.
And yet, the next morning, you did it yourself. Why, in heaven's name, why?
Because I loved you, Reese, and David stood between us. Oh, had you forgotten how desperately in love we were then?
And all these years I thought that David had found the way to solve our problem.
Now I find it was my wife who...
I wanted to spare you. I've never wanted you to share the agony that I knew would be mine, that has been mine, and mine alone. But a secret like that is too terrible to hold forever. And at last, you share it with me.
So in the end, futility. I face life with a clear conscience, only to find that you... That you...
Yes. Now you share, Rhys. But how differently. I've been pleading with you to understand, but you only stare at me with accusing eyes.
Understand? No, I don't understand. How do you expect me to understand?
I think I changed the glasses that night because I was afraid that this day might come for you as it has for me. I was afraid that the time might come when I would stare at you as now you stare at me with eyes that accuse me of murder. I never wanted you to see the look in my eyes. Now, do you understand?
Did you talk about the sledge, Daddy? Did you tell Mummy we could have a sledge?
Oh, Billy. Billy. Ellen. Oh.
Don't cry, Mother. Oh. Daddy. Daddy, I don't want a sledge if it's going to make Mummy cry.
Oh, my darling, you shall have a sledge. Daddy will get you one for Christmas. Oh, you and Billy will have such fun so that you won't miss me too much.
Where are you going, Mummy?
In a few minutes, your daddy will phone up a man we both know. He'll take me away.
Won't you be back for dinner?
No. I'll be gone for a long time, my darling.
Why, Mummy? Why?
Well, many years ago, I did something I had no right to do. Even though at the time, I thought it was the right thing. That's why I must leave you now and pay for this mistake. I want you to be good whilst I'm away and not worry Daddy with too many questions. And you mustn't be unhappy about me, or let Daddy be unhappy, because where I'm going, I shall be able to make up for my mistake and find peace that way. I know it's difficult for you to understand all this now, but someday, when you're older, I think you will. And perhaps someday, when the mistake has been corrected, perhaps then, perhaps...
What your mother is trying to say, children, is that perhaps someday she'll come back to us, because we'll never stop waiting.